This is an advert for Adventist Young Professionals. Adventist Young Professionals fosters Christ-centered community through faith development, authentic connections, and ministry engagement. AYP globally unites and locally connects over 6,500 young professionals through an online community and city-based chapters that facilitate spiritual gatherings, service activities, and social meetups. AYP also educates young professionals for missional impact through an annual convention, mentorship, and inspirational resources. To join Adventist Young Professionals, visit AYP.me. That's AYP.me.
Welcome back to the Faith on Top podcast. Today's guest is our first guest from the UK, and his name is Neil Nunes. Neil Nunes is a journalist, broadcaster, producer, and most notably a newsreader for BBC Radio 4 and BBC World Service.
Neil has been presenting world news bulletins to over 100 million listeners each week on BBC World Service Radio since the age of 24.
He has anchored some of the planet's biggest stories, from historic elections, the death of Nelson Mandela, global era-defining revolutions and catastrophes, having worked at the BBC for over 20 years.
Known for his resonant baritone, he has previously been nominated by the UK Radio Times magazine as one of the 10 best voices on radio in the country.
Neil's journey with the BBC started at the former BBC Caribbean Service, where he would research, produce, and present the major news of the day to some 1 million people in the Caribbean region, interviewing prime ministers and other movers and shakers in all key industries.
Neil Nunes, originally from Mandeville, Jamaica, is a lay preacher and also an ordained elder at Croydon SDA Church in London, UK.
So, we noticed you're from the country of my heritage. So let's just go straight there. What was life like for a young Neil Nunes growing up Mandeville, Jamaica? And how did those early years affect you spiritually, as a student, socially, family life? Can you speak to us about that, please?
Yeah, Mandeville was great. My hometown, in Manchester, Jamaica. Mandeville is in the parish of Manchester. Great from every aspect. I mean, financially, it wasn't great. I was a poor young man, grew up in a poor family, but rich in every other respect. So, you know, lots of laughter, lots of fun, simplicity. We found joy in simplicity. I grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, the main church there in Mandeville, Mandeville Seventh-day Adventist Church. And that was crucial to my formative years. In church, we were given lots of responsibilities, even as youngsters, as we do now in many of our churches. So you'd have to go up and do Bible reading, and you were taught how to do public speaking in church, how to recite your memory verses. You were put in bands and made to do, your memory gems, and it was fantastic. It was a time of my life. I went to primary school there. Again, in primary school, I was trained by teachers. I'm not quite sure what they saw in me, but from the age of 9, 10, I was doing public speaking, drama, plays, that sort of thing. Mm. So that's virtually how I remember Mandeville. The time for high school came, and went to a fantastic high school as well. My high school was in Clarendon, on the border between Manchester and Clarendon, Knox College. And that was fantastic. We had a great time there. My mother was instrumental in everything. She was what you might call in modern language a tiger mom. But she was strong. And she was determined that I would make something great of myself. My mother knew how to dream. I knew how to make sure that that was passed on to me. So there was a lot of playing with my friends. There was a lot of reading eventually, and lots of public speaking, and virtually that's that's how it was in the early days.
So you mentioned growing up in church, doing different Bible memory gems, involved in that side of things. At some stage, though, every young person has to make a decision for themselves as to whether I'm going to stay, but just be loosely connected. When did your Christian faith become your own, and how did you get to know God for yourself?
That's a very good question. I got baptized at the age of 8, a month before my 9th birthday. So I was into church stuff pretty early. But by my teenage years, I can remember that I would, I can't remember how I got this challenge, but somebody challenged me to read Proverbs. And I would just read Proverbs and reread Proverbs and read Psalms. And my own faith began to coalesce. Now, 16, 17, I became a little bit more, I really understood my own context. I understood the challenges that I faced and understood that without God, I am nothing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there would be, you know, there would be times when, as a young person, you'd be more faithful than not. But by 16, 17, I was pretty clued up about how difficult my life was, mm-hmm. and what needed to have happened. And what needed to happen was I needed to be lockstep with Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. By that time, I probably could recite almost all of Steps to Christ. By that time, by year 11 of high school, first year of college, first year of university, I was a pretty serious dude. I had a clear idea of what I wanted God to do for me. Obviously, that faith would take many years to cement. And, you know, faith is never a place where you arrive at. So we constantly grow. So when I left home at 19, I had nowhere else to go but God. So when I left home, I went to another country because I was kind of the, there comes a time in a young person's life where your family doesn't say to you, you're it, but you understand you're it. Mm. You're the leader now. You're older now. You have more education than your parents. Your future is brighter. And so the mantle of leadership needs to be passed. At that time, my mother fell ill. She had some mental health challenges, and I was her primary carer. Mm-hmm. So I left home, not just for myself, but I left home for home. I left home so that I would be in a position to look after those who were behind me, mm-hmm. because I'm like the U.S. Marines, no man left behind. Mm-hmm. So if what I need to do is to migrate, to make sure that I can take care of people, then it's a very long answer to a very short question.
No, we're taking it in.
I was pretty aware of the Bible. By 18, 19, I probably could have teach Sabbath school. You know what I mean?
No, thanks for that. Thanks for sharing. And thanks for giving us some insight into kind of, I mean, that wasn't even real. I mean, thinking to go down that road, but thanks for giving us the insight, really, into where you were kind of coming from and just how context. You were navigating life at that time period. Mm. Oh, thank you.
And I think, Neil, you've actually, in part of your answers, kind of, in a way, set up this next question, which we just wanted to ask: goals and aspirations. You know, what type of goals and aspirations, if any, did you have as a young person? Did you ever struggle with what you wanted to do, what you wanted to be? Did you know purpose? And we also know that, you know, university wasn't a straight line. So could you then speak to that experience as well?
It so happened that at the same time I'm enrolling in university, the university has a radio station. A friend of mine from church says, hey, you know, they're looking for a guy to do the morning program because the main presenter has gone off for holiday. Why don't you come and try out? Because at church, by now, everybody kind of understands that this guy loves radio and has a voice by this time. You know, the voice is broken and changed, and he sounds like he could do radio. So I went to university first as a radio presenter. My understanding is the presenter came back 2 weeks for his job, and the person who hired me said to the gentleman, it's okay, we'll stick with this guy. So for 1 year, I did the sciences at university as a career path, but everything else was radio. Mm. And all my friends from high school who joined me at that university and others said, Neil, Neil, you can do this. This sounds like you. And one day the university librarian, who was a very funny guy, in all seriousness said to me, because I kept saying, no, this is just a hobby. It's just a hobby. Because I couldn't bring myself to confess that I would be a broadcaster, right?
Mm.
And he said, you're the only one who can't hear that this is where you belong. So other people spoke that into me. My mother was very askance. She looked at that and she, you know, he wasn't enthused. But I was so poor at university that when I got a student loan, I didn't apply for a grant, but the government sent it anyway. and I took the grant money and bought a book from the internet in the very early days of the internet about how to be a radio DJ by a guy called Mike Starr from Michigan in the USA. so he had a cassette, and the cassette explained how you get into radio, how you make a demo tape, what you need to include. And so I brought the demo tape over to a producer at the radio station at the university, at the production house. He made a demo tape for me for free. And so when my granny called and said, you want to go to live with your aunt in this country? You probably could do radio there. I said, sure thing. By this time in the summer holidays, I'm doing admin work at my high school because I was a favorite there of the principal. I was a high, you know, the former head boy. So I'd go back and help file a paper or two. And so I said to them, gotta go, gotta leave. All my university friends not coming back. Where are you going? I'm going to try my hand at radio. I went there and with much prayer and fasting and took my demo tape to a radio station manager. Because I went there to a guy and I said to the guy, I'd like to do construction work. And the gentleman shook my hand and he laughed and he said, you've never done a day's work in your life, have you? I said, no. I said, how can you tell? He said, your hands are too soft. He said, what do you really do? I said, radio. He said, go to the radio station, tell him I sent you. I went to the radio station. The man put the tape in the player, pressed play, and he began to listen. And he said, how old are you? By this time, I am older, 19. He said, you're 19? Did you sound like an old man? And he said these words, go down to the newsroom and tell the news director I sent you. Rest is history.
So I'm then interested. You've said the rest is history. I want you to speak to that rest being history. Just very, very briefly, how you then went from that moment to now your presenter, of which it's actually amazing having now heard of, you know, that story and that journey to a degree, but how you went from there to the BBC World Radio Service, essentially the most prestigious radio station, probably recognizable in the world, and to be one of the main presenters for news.
Long story. So while there, the BBC had a division called BBC Caribbean, and they would broadcast back to the Caribbean. Here's one of the things about life. God has a way of putting people in your life who will serve as signposts, guideposts, and support. When he is providentially leading you and you've asked him to lead you. And I had a bunch of people around me who were mentors who never had a bad word to say. They just constantly encouraged, right? Yeah. Constantly encouraged. One of these people, a guy called Stephen, who was also in the newsroom, I said to Stephen, and a few others, you know, I think I could report for these people at the BBC. He said, of course, I think you can report for these people. You sound better than these people. He said, call them up. And he gave me the number. I called him up and I said, hey, BBC Caribbean, you're missing stories. You're missing this story from my patch. Why don't I report for you? And they're like, whoa, these are very important stories, but we have a reporter in that region and he hasn't done stuff for us in a little while. I said, well, I should be your reporter. And they said, well, you have to go to our reporter and ask him for the job. The reporter was the news director of a competing radio station. So I left my radio station, walked over to his radio station, and I said, Mike, I need to take your job and be the reporter for the BBC. And he laughed, you know, older guy. Again, my life has been one where the Lord has caused me to find favor in people's eyes. And he gave me his job. He said, okay, this is what you do. This is who you call. This is how you pitch the story.
Wow.
Always mad. Right? So I took Mike's job as the stringer correspondent in the field, called them back and said, yeah, Mike said it's fine. Then they said, okay, so what are you going to file today? I said, I'll file this. They said, okay, why don't you go and write to Q and come back? Q. Because in the Caribbean, we call things different names. I call Mike. Mike, they asked me to write to Q. What is that and how do I write it? So Mike then taught me how to do his job.
Wow.
Years later, cut a long story short, I met a beautiful young woman by the time I'm 20, 21. She said, she was a nurse. She studied in Jamaica. She wasn't Jamaican, but she studied there. She said, all her friends are in England. She's going to go to England to do a nurse, to do nursing. And, you know, we're now dating, but she wants me to know that that's her goal in life, right? She's going to England. I'm like, well, I'm a reporter for BBC Caribbean. I'll go there with you. And I'll turn up at the BBC and work for them. BBC didn't invite me anywhere. I have no job at the BBC, but you know, I just believe that the Lord will make a way. And so when I came to England, I pitched up at the BBC. I said, hey, guys, I'm here. Can I do freelance work with you? And they're like, well, there's not enough to go around, but we'll invite you in and we'll treat you right. And eventually, the first year was rough. First year was very difficult because I couldn't get any shifts and I wondered whether that thing would work. Mm. And I'm thinking, what else can I do with my life? Because this radio thing stops here, right? And then Pastor Brighton Kovala, who his first sermon at Croydon SDA Church, preached a sermon called Spread It. That was the title of the sermon. It was about Hezekiah spreading the letter that Sennacherib gave him and putting it to the Lord and the Lord coming through. So I took a blank page, wrote broadcasting on it, went home and spread it. And fasted and prayed over it. I kid you not. And I said, Lord, make a way. And said, get up and go and wash dishes. And I'm doing the dishes. And he said, turn the radio on to BBC Radio 2. I don't listen to Radio 2. I listen to Radio 4 or the World Service at that time. And I said, okay, I'll listen to Radio 2. The news came on. He said, okay, somebody had to write that news. Now, what I want you to do, all of this is going on in my head.
Yeah.
You know, call the news center, tell them you're from the BBC Caribbean division. I wasn't fully established, but, you know, I was from the Caribbean division. And I ran up the division and I said, who's the director around here of the, you know, the radio news? And I said, transfer him, please. So I got transferred and I said, I'd like to, you know, to find out how you do news, Radio 5, Radio 2, Radio 3, that sort of thing. And I'd like to write it for you. He said, when can you come? I said, Sunday. He said, come on in. I got trained on their system, and within a week, I was working for them. So I'm now at BBC B, and I'm now at the Radio News Center. And then they say, hey, guess what? National Public Radio, America's National Public Radio, their headquarters, London headquarters, is at the BBC. They need a producer. You want to do some freelance work? Now I'm doing three things, you know? Then I'm listening to the World Service one day, and I'm thinking, you know, I could really read that. I think I can do that. And I knew a guy who was a former newsreader who was at the training center of the BBC. Because when you go to the BBC, you get trained up. I went to him and I said, Alec, I want to read this. Can you train me up? And he did. He sent me to the news director. I didn't get through to the presentation editor. He said, you got a good voice, but you need some more skills. I said, no problem. I'll be back. And I paid my own money out of my own pocket to my voice trainer. And I got trained for a year.
Wow.
And then I started doing it. So at this time, I have 4 gigs going. You know, things are going nice. And I'm writing the news one day for Radio 4 at the center where, you know, the news readers are. And I walk over to this lady who was the doyenne of broadcasting. And I said, I want to work for you. She said, oh, what would you like to do? I said, I want to do exactly what you do on Radio 4. She says, I'll call you back. I just thought that was, yeah, get lost. 1 year later, a message drops in my inbox. Send us a tape. I send a tape. By this time, I'm figuring out what Radio 4 was. I wasn't born in England. I didn't grow up in England. I only heard people saying Radio 4 in hallowed tones. Sure. So I thought, well, if it's that important, I must work for them. So I said to the lady, well, eventually, I am a Caribbean. I'm from Jamaica. I have a Caribbean accent. Do you know what you're asking for? She said, yep, come on over. We think you're good enough. And by that time, I'm on Radio 4 as well. So at 24, I'm the youngest newsreader at the World Service, reading world news, right? At that time. And just to show you about calling live.
Please.
So at 24, I ring my mother up and I'm like, because she's the first person I'm calling. Mom, you can't believe what happened. She said, what happened? I got a promotion of sorts, you know. It's a far bigger audience, bigger than BBC Caribbean, you know. This is tens of millions of people. And I've done it. You know the next question she asked me? Do you know the next question she asked me?
Mm-hmm.
The next question was, yes, but when are you going to do your PhD?
It's not easy.
You mentioned example, oh, I had to wait a year here. I had to wait at this point. And so this isn't a question we had prepared, but as I was listening to you speak then, there was a lot of, it sounded like there was a lot of waiting and a lot of patience at times you had to have about getting to the next stage and your next stage. So mentally, spiritually, dealing with those waiting zones, those waiting seasons, how were you managing? You're not working maybe at times. I think you mentioned a period. How were you coping?
It's not always easy to wait. In hindsight, I can say that sometimes the fastest thing you can do is to be patient. However, what I never have an entitlement attitude. I don't think I'm entitled to anything, right? But what I understand or what I think in my head, particularly in my early 20s, was all I need you to do is make the mistake of giving me an opportunity. That's all I needed to do. However, while I'm waiting, I need to prepare. So there's never a time where I'm waiting, where I'm not waiting properly. You see, there's waiting and there's waiting. There's waiting and being frustrated, and there's waiting, which is training. Mm. So in my mind, I'm not really waiting. I'm in training. I know.
Love that.
I know that the time will come when an opportunity will slide my way. It's all or nothing. I had no other choice. So I just knew that God would provide another opportunity. The best thing you can do to me is challenge me and say, well, you're not quite good enough. Oh. Because now you're telling me to get better. Mm. And the motto of my life is get better till I die.
100%. On this topic of coping in certain spaces, I want to circle back to something you were saying beforehand. BBC released some information, I think it was 2 years ago now. Saying, I think the average age that a guy in England, UK is getting married is 38. You got married at 22.
Yes.
Many people at 22 are still trying to figure out what to do with their life. How did you cope with married at that age, navigating career, being spiritually active, still finding your own self, I guess, at that age? Yeah. Can you speak to us about those pressures?
Those pressures were good pressures. I'm never somebody to run away from pressure. A diamond will only ever form under pressure. In fact, a lot of what people call pressure, I don't even acknowledge it as pressure. I just see it as a process. You know, at 22 or before 22, I met this young woman. She was extremely beautiful, still is. The Lord provided her for me, I should say, hasten to add. I asked her a few questions, figured out that she ticked 8 out of my 10 boxes, realized that I was not prepared to live without her. I understood the challenges. You know, I went to ask her parents' hand in marriage. That was tough. Her mother gave me a proper grilling because it was a proper interview. Proper interview. Her daddy was there and he said, what are your plans for my daughter and how will you support and provide for her? But like I said before, especially at that time, my view of the future is it's bright and getting brighter. Now, the question is, how do you know this? Well, faith doesn't ask questions. It answers them. It says it has no choice. There is no other option. I don't do... Failure is never optional for me. Was it tough? Yes, yes. I must confess that the day after I got married, I had a minor meltdown for 2 minutes. I thought, what? Did I just get married at 22? And a voice just said, yeah, because you've got God. You plus God equals majority. Any day of the week. What can you not overcome?
Hi everyone, I'm Dara Dare, the host of the Undiluted Word podcast. The Undiluted Word is a platform in which 21st century ideas, opinions, and thoughts are discussed in relation to the Bible. We are told in Hebrews 4 verse 12, the Word of God is living and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword. The Word is living and powerful. Therefore, we shouldn't be comfortable in doing pick and mix or in essence, diluting its strength. It's not squash. So, if you're interested in the journey of exploring how various biblical topics relate to living in today's society, look no further. You will hear thought-provoking discussions of young people living in our society in different walks and stages of life. Faith is not just a concept that ends in the last chapters of the Bible. It's alive, living amongst us, and demonstrated on a daily basis. Subscribe to this podcast on whichever platform you use so you don't miss an episode. You can also follow at the undiluted word _ on Instagram. And if you're interested in reading some blog posts, why not check out theundilutedword.com. Bye for now and stay blessed.
It was tough. The toughest period was coming to England, not working as much as I ought to, moving into a new place, not having enough money to make up to pay the rent. Well, you know, her salary could pay the rent, but we couldn't do much more. But the beauty is that I married the most humble woman on the planet, right? And she was very easy and very supportive. And it's okay, honey, we will take our time and we will build and the Lord will provide and he will make a way. Now, when you have somebody like that as the wind beneath your wings, there's hardly anything you can't accomplish. So that pressure was removed because she didn't provide pressure. If anything, she provided support. And so the rest was just up to me to say, make this happen. Mm-hmm. Now you can't fool around in terms of the opportunities, career opportunities. Neither can you fail. Now you must make this work. Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, pressure brings me joy. I like difficulty because difficulty forces me to get better. Mm. And anything in life that is sent to make me better, I look forward to with relish. Mm.
It's really interesting because you basically answered.
He's answered it.
The next question, and it's in the early part of your career, we understand, and you obviously know because you went through it, and you kind of started to touch on it in one of your answers that you received criticism in the press about the suitability of your voice, radio due to your accent. And so we had obviously, you know, wanted to ask about, you know, how was your mental well-being, your spiritual well-being during this period? And how did you remain resilient and confident and obviously continue to then go on and thrive and continue succeeding?
Well, at that stage, some of it did get through. You can't be if some of it doesn't get through. Mm. But it wasn't enough to derail what I was doing. And here's a very important thing, right? There comes a point in your life where you must be confident in God, yes. But in addition to that, faith without works is dead. Mm-hmm. When the children of Israel reached the borders of the promised land, they were told, go, we are well able. They said, we're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. So they died in the wilderness. There has to be something, even if God has a plan for you, if you don't have the faith to actualize it, you'll never realize it. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is you're going to have to give yourself the green light to succeed when others say you must not. Where you don't need the permission of another person to do something that God has already called you to do. Mm-hmm. And so once in my head, because, you know, so your confidence will get knocked all through life. That's just how life is. When I thought about that and I realized that this is God appointed, I simply said to myself, well, yeah, let's have more fun. Let's just keep doing this. I like criticism. I thrive on criticism because then I use some of it and I look at it and think, maybe they have a point. I'll work on that. No, this person is simply just being vindictive. I'll ignore that. So you also need to know how to filter and how to be criticized without being crushed. And problem is, many young people these days, they take criticism too roughly. If it is sent to make you bitter, you can use it and make it make yourself better. So, but always remember, once God says go, you've got the green light. You don't need somebody else to give you the confidence. But that's how I dealt with it.
Yeah,
crystal
100%. Crystal clear. Oh, that was powerful. Mm. And so you've been saying, and you said it more than once. You're a person of faith, person of prayer. So just whilst at the BBC, thinking about your career there, what's been your general experience of kind of sharing faith, opportunities you've had to share faith in the workplace? What's been your experience with that?
My faith is not something that I leave at home. Mm. My faith informs my worldview, my view to life. And so just my normal conversation, how I treat others, all of that is faith. So sometimes it'll lead to the Bible. More often than not, I'll say something and they'll say, how did you arrive at this position? You know, just friends chatting or colleagues. And I'll say, well, you know, that's what the Bible says. You know, sometimes I'll invite colleagues to hear me preach. Other times I'll share encouragement in social media. And so from a very early point in my career, they understood that I'm a lay preacher. They understood that Neil is different from us. He's a Christian. So sometimes I will looked upon as the silly one, or sometimes they'll come to me for advice and encouragement. I'm not aggressive. I know how to pitch according to people's sensitivities, because the first law of media is, who's your audience? Who are you talking to? You know? So you tailor stuff that way. But it's not been real difficult. There are times when, you know, I've had to negotiate leaving early on a Friday and people wouldn't understand. But you keep at it. You keep at it, because I am a Christian before I am a broadcaster. I'm a Christian before I am a husband. It is my relationship with Christ that is most significant. Everything else flows through that. So some things are not even optional.
You've kind of spoke to this question already, but just to unpack it a bit more. Sometimes in corporate culture, office culture, there can be certain expectations that impact the way things are done. And I can imagine there's probably those influences at the BBC also. Josh, how does one remain, just to the young people that might be listening, how does one remain true to themselves in those types of environments?
What's your purpose? You know what I mean? What's your calling? Your life should flow from a center. Your life should radiate from a space. I choose to make that space. You are bought with a price, therefore glorify God. You are a royal priesthood. You're a holy nation. You're a God's special treasure. So that's the space that things come from. You are God's apostle. You are sent to encourage. As a result of you, people should know God more. And sometimes the challenge you face in the workplace is simply God allowing you to be tested so you can reveal what real, genuine Christianity is about. Christianity hardly ever happens when times are good, because everybody is a Christian when the sun's shining, right? Christianity reveals itself when you've got a toxic workplace, or you're asked to make a compromise, or you know what I mean? In your work ethic, especially your work ethic and your approach to work, what kind of jokes do you run at work? Would they be surprised to learn that you go to church on a Sabbath? That sort of thing, you know? So I've been an ordained elder at church, but I had the blessing of meeting an older elder who said to me, you're an elder at work as well. No, you're not, you don't have to go out, I'm your elder, but you behave like an elder at work. So that you, at no time do you, it's not always easy. We're not perfect. We will make mistakes, But we should not give cause to colleagues to laugh at our God. In fact, it's a very simple purpose that we all have. Let your light so shine that when your colleagues and those around you see how you operate, they will have no other choice but to think about the God we serve. That's the theory, at any rate. And that's what I try to live by.
I appreciate that. And we know you're an ordained elder, your local church being Croydon, and we know you've been for many years. We know you also have preached around the UK, you've preached abroad, your Pathfinders. So it just seems to us that service to God is important to you, really important to you. And so could you just give us reasons why you still make it a priority to serve in your local church, engage your Pathfinders and ultimately serve God the way you do?
Because that's what Christ asked. That's the template he laid down. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God is not just heaven. It's things that pertain to the kingdom. We are all, whether or not we like it, we're ministers. I choose to be a minister first. And whatever I do for God is the least I can do in comparison to what he's done for me. You know what I mean? Christ, the greatest, left heaven and became our servant, a servant leader. And then he said in John chapter 13, verse 35, I have set you an example. See that you follow the lead that I have set. And so for me, it's pretty easy. God first. Everything else second. And so if God requires it for his glory, then I must move other things to make space for it. It happens that I do public speaking and I can string a few words together. So if you'd like me to preach a sermon and the Lord has given me a message, I'll do that. If I should go and help somebody over somewhere else, I'll do that, because we're all ministers. Every one of us, whether you're ordained, whether you're serving or not, Matthew 25 makes clear God is coming for people to whom he can say, well done, good and faithful servant. And that's success. I don't care how much cars you have, what the brand is, your bank account, your position in life. I will never be successful until I can hear God say, well done, good and faithful servant. Everything else is temporary. In the book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen R. Covey said, things which matter most must never be at the mercy of things which matter least. And so that's how I approach it. He says, begin with the end in mind. So that at the end of the day, the end of your life, you can look back and say, yeah, I wouldn't have it any other way. I did what was right the best way I could through Jesus Christ.
Amen. You've been said this a couple of times now. You've said we're not perfect. We may fall from time to time, but we still press on. I'm just wondering, career wise, is there an experience that you could share to say maybe I could have made a better decision here, but I've learned from this, and this is how I've overcome.
In the early days, when I was making a name for myself, I made radio features, short documentaries, 15 minutes, that sort of thing. And I kind of developed a reputation as the guy who could get the stars, the Wycliffe Jeans, the Shaggies, the Sean Paul, these kind of people, the biggest music stars. And I would do lots of features with them. But I was also not just the researcher and the presenter, but the producer. So I was the one mixing in the music and making it work. And there came a time where I said, I'm not going to do that anymore. You know, and they'd say, hey, Neil, you're going to give us another feature. And I'd say, no, because in the end, even though I'm a journalist, and as a journalist, all you're doing is telling a story, because I get so involved, I ended up sort of promoting their material, sort of glorifying them. And if I have to do a feature or a story because something happened, fine. But I was the kind of guy who could create stuff. I say, you know what? We're going to look at a feature. We're going to do a feature of why reggae music from an island that's 147 miles long, 52 miles wide, is one of the biggest genres on the planet. bingo, we're going to do that. We're going to speak to this. We're going to speak to that. And it came a point where I said, no, I'm not doing that. When carnival season came around and, you know, the program had to be bent towards carnival music, I said, hey, let somebody else do that. Because even in my work, I need to be careful how I operate. These days, I only do primarily news reading. I don't do as much reporting as I used to do. So I'm simply telling you what the news is, right? Mm-hmm. So that's pretty innocuous for the most part. Mm-hmm. But I remember when I made that decision that I wouldn't use my talents to glorify people who are not necessarily bent on glorifying God, because somebody else can do that. Because in your life, you need to have what the marketers call a differential advantage. Tisha will understand where I'm coming from. you need a USP. What makes you different? What makes you great? What makes you special? Why should an employer have you? And so I was trying to focus on that, to say, yeah, I'm the kind of guy that can hang with the stars. I'm like, no, I'll just be the guy who will be a good presenter. And who can tell you a story, and who will do a great job at any given time. But I'm not going to go out of my way to idolize people.
Great answer, I think, and you pivoted that in regards to the positive. So yeah, appreciate that. A question we like to ask all of our guests is about managing their time. Everyone's always talking about managing time, trying to manage their time in the best way. This technique, this way. So with all the different commitments you've had over the years, alongside your church responsibilities, your family that you've got to, you know, put time and effort into as well, and other responsibilities, social time you want to make for yourself, you know, how do you go about managing your time? And maybe are there any practical tips you could share of ways that have helped you potentially as well?
Yes, it's been difficult because one of the drawbacks of my approach is because I like pressure and I like challenges, I will take on too much. I know when to say no, but you can only pressure yourself so much before, as they say these days, the body keeps score before your body just begins to tell you, hey, you know, We're overtaxed here. And so I have been inordinate at times in taking on too much. But really, the model, as I said before, that I espouse is I try to focus on what's important. And I have learned a magic word called N-O, stands for no. It's simply, but I delegate. And let's face it, I have a family who is very supportive. And so all of that helps in time management. But what I tend to do, I focus on this, what's most important. What can we leave for next time? What can we ignore for right now? And that's how that's generally my approach. Is it significantly important? Yes. And here's the thing. There are times in life where you can't do it all. And you have to be okay with that. And you have to make a list of priorities as to what you're going to do, why you're going to do it. And does it fit in with your calling? Does it fit in with your long-term purpose and your goals?
Thank you. Thank you very much. So in line with that, you're saying no to some things. You've got your priorities to some things. You're taking on maybe a bit too much at times, but you're learning to say no. How does Neil Nunes switch off? What does that look like for you?
If you ask my wife, she'll tell you I have no problem switching off.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
I work hard. I pray hard. I play hard. I rest hard. When I'm ready to I switch. Let's be honest. Most Fridays I do not work. Most Fridays. And I ease into the Sabbath gradually. So Sabbath is the time when I reset. Fridays, I generally try and get things done that I haven't done all week. So I'm a father. I am a husband at that stage. I am doing stuff around the house. I have a small circle of people that, you know, friends, and, you know, we play basketball sometimes. Other times I am taking my family overseas or something along that line. But here's the thing. My switch off is deliberate. So it's built into the schedule. It's part of an important thing that must be done, because rest for me is critical. It's critically important. So relaxation time and family time is built in. So it's not something I don't grab rest as and when. It's deliberate. Everything I do is deliberate. It's purposeful. When I walk into a radio studio, I go home.
Wow.
That's where I'm comfortable. You know, some guys are out there playing basketball. I'm playing radio. You know, I'm in my 40s doing this thing, you know. So, yeah, I'll work hard. Don't get me wrong. There are times when I do push the hours and work nights and unreasonable hours and so on and so forth. But it's just having too much fun. That's all it is. So I can't really complain. Neither will I attempt to.
You just mentioned something at the end of the answer. You said you're in your 40s. We know you're in the very early part of your 40s. And so you've still got some years, you know, by God's grace, potentially 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years maybe still to live, to succeed, to achieve, and to do everything that you potentially would like to. So, yeah, how do you see your career going potentially from here? The goals maybe that you might have, aspirations, how you're putting those together. Just interesting to hear.
These days, I realize that God does not necessarily have one plan for your life. God is sometimes into project management. I am available. Whatever project he will send my way, I will be ready. I'm easy. I'm available. It could be more preaching. It could be more teaching. It could be more ministry. It could be more of the same of what I'm doing. Because as I said before, I'm living my fantasy, right? If you told me at age 19 that at age 42, going into my 40s, I'd still be doing this at the level, I'd have laughed at you and said, you're a joker. I have other dreams, which, you know, some will remain unsaid, but I like impossible things. So you might just hear that Neil is attempting some really ridiculous stuff. And you'll say, yeah, that's pretty much him. That's what he does. So I'll go and find something that, you know, is very difficult, that'll stretch the living daylights out of me and drive me within 1 inch of madness. And I'll do that. More of the same, hopefully, more of the same, but whatever the Lord wills.
So for people in their 20s and 30s with career aspirations, what's something that a piece of advice you would give them that they can start doing in their next 7 days that would help them on their journey?
Whatever is it that you want to be at the zenith, at the peak of your powers, do it now. If in 10 years, 15 years, you see yourself as a consultant or the head of a company making £250,000 per year, and you perceive that at that level, you would have had to have read 10 books on MBA, on health management, or running Fortune 500, or running the world's biggest charity, start now. We rarely arrive at the future. The future is simply a manifestation of what you are today. So don't leave greatness for next week. Anything, whatever it'll take to get to the top of whatever you want to do, you got to start right now. Read that book now. Start dressing like that person now. Never, ever be contented with average. Why would you get up, shower, brush your teeth, have breakfast, or whatever order that you do it in, and be average, and be deliberately average? Why would you do that? That's a type of death to me. It's a type of stifling the great potential that God has put in you, and you are deciding you would rather vegetate or not do more because, you know, it's hard work. And so there are some people who don't make a living. They make a dying because daily they suppress that great diamond mine that's with them. just max out. You know, max out. Every day you should go to bed saying, wow, live life on the edge of your ability and your potential, because why not? What are you doing? A quick story. I grew up in Manchester, Jamaica, which you know, Manchester, Jamaica is a place where they dig bauxite. Bauxite is the raw material for aluminium, or as the Americans say, aluminum, which makes drinks cans and it makes aircraft. I'll tell you this, I have never seen a shallow bauxite mine. It's deep caverns that they dig in the earth to get to the real stuff. Dig deep in who you are. Don't read the Bible. Why would you read the Bible? Study the Bible. Dig deep in the Word of God. Come up with some gems that'll sustain you, that'll keep you going, that makes you excited about the Word of God. You know, go and buy some Bible Encyclopedia. Buy the Adventist Bible Commentary Series. That's just how I see it. Because here's the thing. One day, an opportunity will come, and you will only be able to realize it or capitalize on it if you have been practicing, preparing, working hard in advance. Then you can capitalize on it and never be satisfied with good. Why should your good be the enemy of your great? You know what I mean? I'm still practicing radio to this very day. I can train. I can do voice training. I've done that. I can train you in radio presenting, but I'm still training myself. Because when you think you have reached the peak of your powers, that's when you slide down. You know, so never be content. To be content, godliness with contentment is great gain. Paul to Timothy, right? So you need to have that subterranean river of contentment running deep within your soul. That refreshes you daily, because if you love God and you know God, you have no choice but to be content. But whatever your hand finds to do,
do it with all that might.
Do it with every fiber of your being. Because if you give 100%, 100% of the time, chances are you'll get back 100%.
Neil, we've reached the final question, and you've mentioned a few verses as we've spoken, but I just want to know if there's maybe been one verse or a story potentially in the Bible that has maybe been a form of consistent encouragement on your journey that maybe you've always referred back to, and maybe has even got you potentially through pivotal times and moments. Maybe there's one or two, but just see if you can just speak to that in closing.
Joseph. I think it's Genesis 39, if I'm not mistaken. That's Genesis 30, Genesis 40. And the Lord gave Joseph favor in the eyes of Potiphar, favor in the eyes of the jail keeper. Hey, let me tell you something. For most of us, if not all of us, our success, no matter how hard you've worked, is down to God giving you favor in somebody's eyes. You ever forget that? So don't you ever live in fear, because he can cause you to find favor in somebody else's eyes. And when you've got a God who can open a door that no one else can open providentially and cause people to like you, because that's my story, God provides favor for us. We live, we bask in the sweet glow of God's mercy, as Mark Chapman wrote in that song, in the sweet glow of God's mercy. And so I am grateful. I wake up every day grateful, supremely grateful to the God I serve for the favor that he's provided in my life.
Thanks for listening, guys. And if you are blessed and really found this episode meaningful and useful, don't forget to share this episode with someone.
Remember to follow us on social media at Faith on Top Podcast and turn on your notifications so you can get a reminder when the next episode is out.
If you want to reach out to us, you can send us a direct message on Instagram, or you can email us at faithontoppodcast@gmail.com.
Audio and sound was by Nuete Aye and Maito Minder.
See you next Wednesday.